We are pleased to have in the studio today two Bruces for the price of none.
Get what you pay for.
Yeah, exactly.
We have Bruce, I never met a wall I couldn't draw on more, sir. And Bruce, why the hell did I ever come back from New Zealand to this Hallman? Here in the studio, Bruce Morser, of course, illustrator, my good rowing buddy on the rowing team. Bruce Hallman, island historian, our go-to guy whenever we have a question about anything that ever happened in the past around here. And you guys have collaborated on what is looking like is going to be a truly astonishing piece of work at the Vashon Center for the Arts. And first of all, just thanks for coming and talking to us about it, because everybody's curious about it.
Oh, morning, Jeff and Cindy. Yeah. Thanks for having us. This is great.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Let's start by just talking about what it was that precipitated this. How did it come to be that this piece of work is coming into creation?
This is sort of maybe a two-part question, really, although you don't know you're asking that.
Yeah.
One is, literally, what was the mechanism that triggered the first step? And then the second question is, so why did a simple little request on King County's part turn into this elaborate thing that's kind of consumed my life for the last 8 months or so? And so to answer kind of the trigger question real quickly, in the permitting process on the Vashon Center for the Arts, of which I was a board member during the duration of the project and on this construction committee and the building committees. Permitting's a big deal, getting a structure through King County, and all the things like parking and water and all those permits one by one were gathered. And one of the trickiest ones to get was from the historical folks at King County. And they realized that the center was an interesting place, and they wanted to do something to make sure that we remembered center as it was. So they said, do something to pay homage to the original structures of the center, and we'll issue the permit. So this was not my idea.
By historical structures, do you mean McFeeds?
Well, that's what they meant. And even then, I kind of realized that that seems a little thin. So Molly Reed and Angela Gist, who are the director and deputy director of the VCA, collared me and said, if we can find some funding, would you do this? Because you know about the project, you know about the buildings that were here and the buildings that are going to be here. Would you handle this? And I agreed, but then I didn't know how it was going to grow.
Yeah. So at that time, you didn't know what the idea might be. You just knew that, okay, yeah, I'll sign on to this.
In that frantic effort to stop laughing, Bruce. In the frantic effort to get this project to fruition, you did what you had to do in order to bring it home in a responsible way. And so I was like, okay, I'm the right guy to do this. I mean, I know about this. So sure, I'll try.
So you're no expert on center history. You, of course, had to consult with Bruce Hallman.
I did many, many, many times.
So let's get toward the creation process. How did that go? How did you guys meet and just start talking about the history of center, or what?
Well, it's really Bruce's story, and in the sense that, you know, explaining how that sort of origin came about to meet a permit requirement, you know, and then you know,
art.
Bruce as an artist takes over, and it sort of grows like Topsy into this thing that it's become. And so it's really interesting to see and talk to Bruce when you hear him talking about that creative process of thinking about, King County was thinking about maybe a wall kiosk with a couple photographs of the old McFeed building.
Yeah.
I mean, that's sort of
their concept. Easy in, easy out.
Yeah, right. Yeah, boom.
Okay, you know, we're done.
Yeah. And then Bruce comes in and you can pick that story up because that's when it sort of grows into what it is.
I know that nothing's ever really very simple with Bruce Morser when you get down to it. So
regrets, I've had a few. No regrets on this at all. In fact, the exact opposite. But as the thought of most everyone looked at the old building, the one that was taken down in order to build the new VCA. And it was sort of sad because everyone has a sort of a love thing with that building, even though it was crumbling, it was deteriorated. We originally looked into, could we save it? Was there even, if it had to come down, could you then offer up the materials for free? Or could, and you realize there was nothing in that building.
It was a Quonset hut.
It was a bird cage, right, kind of. It was a bird nest of a building. Right, and it was not something you could deconstruct. It was going to come down. So what do we do? And when I started looking into that building, is how do I acknowledge this structure? Well, when you went looking for information about it, well, you realize McFeed's is a tiny part of its history and really not a very significant part of its history. In fact, when I went, Bruce Holman helped me try to capture even getting the original McFeed's logo. And we looked everywhere from phone book ads,
newspapers.
Really? You couldn't find it?
No.
Haven't found it yet.
Wow.
We're still searching.
But you're pretty sure they had one?
Sort of draw it, because I have that kind of memory. Right. But Bruce Holman even put Facebook ads in, and I asked a few friends to put separate Facebook searches, and we could never come up with McFeed's. So that really illustrates the point that that part of the building is not significant. The fact that it's Ed Zarth's garage, Island Garage, that is significant.
Uh-huh.
And that it replaced a small Baptist church, that's even more significant. And the more I looked into this, I began to realize, wait a minute, this is a whole lot more interesting than where Frack used to live, and I would buy dog food. This was a lot bigger than that. In fact, I began to realize this is a story about who lived here before the European settlers, who lived here before those people lived here, and where was this place?
Mm-hmm. And so the digging began, and you started going beneath the layers to create a piece that really truly is like layers of history. And I guess at this point, for people who have not seen any of the pictures on Facebook or any of the artist drawings,
newspaper today,
how would you describe this piece? This is going to be without showing it to somebody, it's a difficult piece to describe.
Do your best, Jeff.
Yeah.
Well, it's not just two-dimensional.
It's right. The space dictated that it was two-dimensional. I think the significant thing to say is I'm really interested in pieces of work that cross this border between, is this a piece of art or is this an illustration? And I live in both of those worlds, and I've always liked treading those two fine lines.
And there's a third element in there as well, which is engineering. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is an engineered piece to make it work. And so it's art, it's illustration, it's engineering. And that's the genius of the other Bruce that comes into play, because it comes together and it works.
Yeah, very interactive in that it has these sliding panels on it.
Yeah, it sort of goes back to that concept of discovery learning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, rather than just seeing it, you know, you've got to interact with it. You've got to discover. It's like peeling an onion, in effect. You just don't get it in one look.
Yeah,
you've got to be there. You've got to move panels around. You've got to step back. You've got to come in close. I mean, those are the kinds of things, to me, you know, as a historian, I mean, that's what you want people to do with history. You want them to interact with it, not just sort of sit back and be a receptor. And that's the genius of Bruce Mercer as an illustrator, as an artist, and as an engineer, is to be able to put something together that forces people into that kind of interaction.
It's one of the things I liked about the space was that it's, you can never get far enough back from this to see the whole thing. And the fact that it, the piece itself obscures itself because of the panels you mentioned, that at no point can you see all the imagery I've drawn, that some of the imagery always covers some of the other imagery, so that you're compelled to reach up and do what you're not supposed to do, is touch artwork. But you're supposed to touch this and push panels around to see, well, what's under that? Which is by Bruce Holman's description of the history of the event, when he, and everyone knows who knows Bruce, which is 98% of the island, that talking with him is one of those things that, you know, fasten your seatbelt. It's going to be a while. And that you, as you keep going, you keep like, well, wait a minute, Bruce, tell me more about this. And you push another thing aside, which reveals another layer. And then you hear about that. And then Bruce will usually push that aside for you and say, yeah, but before that came this. And it's that way of sort of slowly revealing. You mentioned the digging. And I think that's kind of the feeling. I wanted people to have to physically realize I have to touch this in order to see it all. And at that point, they're so close because their arms are only so long that you're forced into this interaction with it. And you don't really want to step back to see the whole thing. And if you did, then you'd hit the wall behind you. And that prevents you from doing that. And that kind of intimacy is kind of one of the things I think we all feel about our love for the island. Certainly, it's one of the things that Holman's always given me a real connection with on this island.
So these images, they all look like they're attached to very specific stories. You just look at one little piece of the installation and you think there's a story right there.
Right.
And of course, as we've had Bruce Holman in here many, many times to talk about the various stories that you seem to have right at your fingertips. Could you pick a couple slices of this piece that are illustrated in this installation and tell us the story behind them?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, one of the ones I love is the photograph in front of the Zarth garage of all these. Zarth started a garage and then he became a dealer for Willis and Whippet cars. Now, those are names you don't hear very much.
No.
Some people of a certain age will associate Willys with Jeeps and because it grows out of the Jeep, the World War II Jeep grows out of the Willys. Sort of factory. But Whippets, you know, you got to have been around in the 20s or be a car aficionado to know about Whippets. He becomes a Willis Whippet dealer for Vashon. Well, he decides to have a celebration and sort of a salesman sort of thing to get all the Willis and Whippet owners on Vashon to bring their cars. And he recruits some people from off the island. And then they meet at Burton and they drive up to center. And they line their cars up in front of the garage, and they're all standing by their cars, and they take a photograph. Norman Edson takes a photograph of the garage with all these cars lined up. And then they take all the cars, and they drive down to KVI Beach, and they have a picnic. I mean, what a sales technique. But it creates an image that's one of the most interesting images in the whole
thing.
When
would this have been?
This would have been in the late 20s.
Late 20s.
Okay. Yes. 27, 28, something like that.
And wasn't the same building, though. It wasn't the McFeed's building, was it?
Or yeah, it was at that time.
Okay.
It was Ed Zarth built that building in 26.
Okay.
So the church came before that?
The church was church was in the late 1880s.
Yeah.
And then, you know, ultimately, Zarth buys the property, builds a garage in 1920, 21, that then burns down in 25 or something like that. Right. And then he builds this building in 26.
This is the one that we think of as a Quonset hut, which really is not a Quonset hut, but it sure looks like one.
Yeah.
But when
you
go inside and look up into that building, as it was, the woodwork, the way it was built is something that you pay tribute to
The Zarth building was literally built of 1x4s, just really crummy, cheap, dimensional lumber, 1x4s.
In earthquake country.
Well, as we were trying to figure out, could we deconstruct the building to offer materials to islanders? And there are no beams. There were no substantial beams in the building. It literally was a bird nest.
I was watching it when the construction crew knocked it down.
Yeah.
And it looked pretty easy to do.
Yes. And easy in a kind of a tangled way. It's like easy to, you know, a fishing line tangled into a ball is easy to push around too. But the building had that quality to it. My daughter and I, this is one of the great dad-daughter moments for me, we drew a picture of sort of a busy scene of what might be inside the coming Vashon Center for the Arts on the side of the old McFeed's building. And I spent a lot of time on a ladder leaning up against, and you could bounce the ladder on the building and you could feel the whole building pulse underneath you.
Wow.
Okay. It had its moments.
Yeah. Which was good in earthquakes because it wasn't going to fall down. It was just going to move.
Yeah. It might come down while you're drawing the picture. And of course, that was fun because it was a progressive work, piece of work. You did a little bit every few days
and added an image
to it.
Right.
And it had kind of that Harold and the Purple Crayon quality to it.
That's right. Yeah. Yes, that was good.
And and now here you are inside the building that was that replaced it, paying tribute to the building and other icons of Center. At the same time, does it feel like you've kind of completed a circuit in a way?
Yeah, very much so. Maybe why I was compelled so much to do this project and why the spirit grew. Before we get too far away from this, though, that what Bruce Holman just described about Ed Zarth, this is very significant because he is largely now remembered for this, if he's remembered at all, which he really is not, but this one right. Norman Edson photo, which right. is a beautiful photo. Right. If you want to get your photo taken by somebody, Edson was the guy. It sort of made it last. Yeah. But the Zarth family was a big family on the island, of which I don't believe there are any Zarths left on the island at all. But they were involved in agriculture and horses and lived on the sort of northwest side of the island, as I recall.
Up north where the Catholic Church is.
Uh-huh.
You know, was a Zarth farm.
Right. And there's a wonderful photo that I included in my drawings. I tried to include a lot of sort of well-known photos or photos that are iconic of the island. And it is Ed Zarth with two big horses, they sort of look like draft horses.
Draft horses.
And that compared to Ed standing there with his with his fleet of whippets. You have to understand that the Whippet is sort of like the Chevy Vega. It was not the high-end automobile, but it was known as a very reliable. I guess that's not like the Vega.
There the similarity ends.
But that you had this transition between the farmer and then the new businessman on the island that is bringing automobiles to the island. Holman is the right guy to describe the significance of this.
Yeah, well, it's that transition from an agricultural to an industrial society. I mean, America's gone through that from beginning in the post-Civil War period. Mm-hmm. I mean, Civil War sort of pushes American industrialization. And all through the late 19th and into the early 20th century, you have this incredible migration from farms to cities and from an agricultural-based economy to an industrial-based economy. And Ed Zarth is just a Vashon representative of that move of a family from being farming, and the Zarth farm was a big farm, you know, hay and horses, and then all of a sudden the descendants are opening garages and selling cars. I mean, it's emblematic of the change in American society that's occurring in the early 20th century.
Draft horses to tractors.
Exactly. Exactly.
Our guests are Bruce Morser and Bruce Holman talking about the new installation at the Vashon Center for the Arts. If you're wondering where in the building this is located, it's in the breezeway that leads, well, I guess it's the hallway that leads to the breezeway.
That's right.
On the highway side.
The west wall.
If you were to look at this piece and go through that wall, you'd be looking straight across at the Fuller store and the highway.
That's right.
I thought it was kind of cool that they're in color. It's a lot of it is black and white on wood, and also there's a lot of, is it plexiglass?
Yes. I drew on wood pieces that I formed, and then I also had other drawings that I worked on that I then printed on plexiglass because I wanted translucence, which I played with.
Yes, yeah. Well, I thought it was cool that you've got some birds on the piece. I'm not exactly sure. I'm not a big birder. I don't know what kind of birds those are, but
that's a chicken.
They stand out. They really stand out on the piece.
That's an eagle eye, Cindy.
And it just occurred to me that it was kind of cool that the breezeway is named after Alan and Amy Huggins, and Alan, of course,
big birder,
Yeah. And I just thought, I don't know if that was intentional or not, but it was just very cool that you're walking through, you see these birds, and then you're in the Alan and Amy Huggins breezeway.
That's a much better story than the one I have. So
let's go with that, right?
Actually, it's an important piece that one of the things that Bruce and I, because we're going to be presenting about this, when is that?
The 25th.
Week from Saturday.
Okay. Thanks for that reminder. And
it's coming up, class.
Yeah, it is closing. That we were looking at the different themes that we tried to incorporate. And one of the things that Holman really helped me with was picking out all these different themes, that it's not, you're not able to look at center from any one view, that to really understand this simple little intersection, to look at it in all these different approaches. And one of them was birds. One of the important things, and Bruce Holman really helped me with this, I kept thinking, I will have a bunch of written language or words on the piece that will sort of self-describe things. And Holman just basically said, he said it politely like he would. He's like, no,
words.
Yeah, don't do that. And then Julie stepped in and said, Bruce is right. Don't do that. And
this she, Bruce, not that Bruce. Yeah,
she had promoting the same thing on the side. It's like, don't put words on it.
Show, don't tell.
Right. Yeah, so to that spirit, how do you show time?
Uh-huh.
I would have probably had dates on things, and there are very few dates on this now. But one of the ways you can show passage of time is the birds change. So that if you're an old growth forest, you have very different birds that live in logging forests. Anyone who's cleared some of their own land knows this, that you put a clearing on your land and all of a sudden different birds show up. And that are different birds that are there when you have a full-grown, like, berry field,
mm-hmm.
or when it starts to become residential and you're beginning to have these mixed hardwood mm-hmm. forests return, different birds. And Bianca Perla was terrifically helpful to me. She stepped in and basically, like, let me help you out of this morass. I can show you. And I just said, Bianca, just tell me what birds to put where.
Yeah.
And so that's why there are these different colored birds. And you can follow that theme, one of probably... There are probably about 8 or 9 themes that hold this together, and that's just one of them. It's a way of measuring time in birds, not in numbers.
Well, place us in that spot where you're standing there looking at this piece, facing west.
West.
Mm-hmm. If there were no building there, and it was 100 years ago,
mm-hmm.
And you were just looking out that direction, what would you have seen?
This is a good question.
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, 130 years ago or so, you would have seen mostly old growth forest looking west from there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Fuller Store doesn't come along till later. You know, the what's now the Roastery was slightly before that. You know, in the late 1880s, if you turned around and looked east, you would have been looking at the church, you know,
mm-hmm.
at the first schoolhouse. But there wasn't a lot around there, and most of it was still uncut at that point.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the big timber cuts on Vashon, clearing the old growth forest, you know, occur in the 1880s, start in the 1880s. You know, 1890s, Vashon sort of loses, you know, 2/3 of its population because of a depression. And so it's really not until after 1900 that you get massive kind of logging on the island.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, between 1900 and 1915. Probably 2/3 of the island is logged.
Yeah.
So before that, you couldn't see things. After that, when they built the new high school,
yeah,
in 1930, they built it there because you had a great view of Puget Sound and Mount Rainier.
From there,
you go there now.
Nothing. Yeah.
You see second
nothing
growth forest.
Trees.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what you would have seen. You know, 150 years ago. Only it would have been first growth forest.
The thing that's amazing is 120 years ago, if you were standing there looking west, other than the walnut trees being a lot bigger now, it would look pretty much the same.
Yep.
You would have the Fuller Store.
Uh-huh.
You would have the little red sheds. They show up a couple decades after that.
Right.
But basically, that whole scene is largely unchanged. And the Fuller Store is still pretty darn original.
Right. Yep, right. Yep.
So a week from Saturday is the unveiling of the piece, and you guys are going to do a double team conversation on stage, I guess, and talk about it like we're talking about it now.
Yeah, right. We will describe. We just stewed this one up over a couple of cups of coffee, so I'm sure it'll be great. We'll try to hit the range of artistically. Why did this happen the way it happened? Sort of in terms of the permitting process, how that happened, but then a lot to do with the stories of the history of the island and what's significant. And I think the key thing that really is important to get across is this was a lot of effort on a lot of people's part, and it totally destroyed my wife's house for 8 months. I mean, really destroyed it. It's still pretty wrecked. But why do all this for this little intersection? And the really important thing to get across is, because it's not just this little intersection, looking at the world through this little intersection is a lens to understand how did Vashon become the place it became, which is also, you keep looking out through that same lens and you realize, oh, that's how the whole Northwest came to be as it is. This transfer from the significance of water transportation to land transportation, from communities that were diverse and separated from each other to the ideas of bigger communities like a whole island together or cities together. And that's why I got more and more motivated as time went by, realized this is a lot bigger story. Why didn't I just do the kiosk with the photos? Brochures on the right, helmet. Right.
So that's going to be at 2 o'clock on the 25th
that's correct.
The lobby of the VCA.
Yep.
At, of course, Center.
That's right.
Bruce Morser, Bruce Hallman, thank you so much for joining us. This has been fascinating, and we can't wait to see the final version of this thing. There are so many pieces. I got to help with the loading in yesterday, and it was just so fun because there are so many individual pieces to this. It's like a puzzle, and it's going together in that same sort of progressive way that the mural on the front of the old McFeed's went together. So I'll be by after the show because I just want to see what's next. I'll probably visit every day this week, actually.
It's pretty impossible to get the full grasp of it from the sketch that's in yesterday's Beachcomber, because it is a sketch and it's, there we go, two-dimensional. So. Yeah.
You got to be there in person. Thanks, guys.
Looking forward to it.
Oh, thank you,
guys. Appreciate you coming by.
Thank you, Bruce.
Thank you, Bruce.